Accession number 30267, Real 7.
Joe Patient, Real 7. Yes, I imagine, you know, this would have been the time of radar, wouldn't it, Joe? You know,
yes.
Radar would have been developed through this time. Mm. And I can imagine...
Well, in actual fact, no, it's not, not radar as such. It's you press your button, transmitting button, and then they took a fix on your position, and then they knew what course that you had to make to go back to base.
Yes, and who were the people doing this?
Oh, WAF, yes, it's all WAFs in a room.
Yes,
this
would have been communicated.
Yes. Once we were clear of enemy, so-called enemy territory, if we wanted to relax, or we were a bit concerned about the navigation, having not perhaps been the whole trip being in cloud, you weren't really sure of where you were, and by this means you could get an accurate course to steer back to base. And it relieved you of a little of the worry once you were sure you yourself were clear of enemy territory. You wouldn't do otherwise, because if you transmitted, then of course once you transmitted, if there are searchlights, radar finding searchlights, they would immediately pounce upon you, and you didn't want to do that.
But that was useful to have these.
Oh yes, it was a great, great help.
Providing you didn't swear at them.
Well, I never swore at them.
I was thinking of your Tommy. Right. Okay, Joe. So you accepted this. Would this have been a sort of promotion to have been asked to join this elite?
Well, it was not a promotion as such, but it was. I think it was an honour to be asked to join. They must have, you see, there are air crews and there are air crews. Don't know quite how to word this. Perhaps some won't say stick in the mud, but very methodical and etc. and can do everything as according to the book. And there are others who could use a very great deal of initiative. And I think initiative was the thing that they looked for in Pathfinder Force. I always remember the citation they made, and a tenacity of purpose of a very high order of deed. So tenacity of purpose, my guy. Oh, in retrospect, you can have a good laugh about these things.
Did you have to retrain for it? You know, for doing
no.
when you were with
no,
one
we
for
no, because
nine.
We had a very good training anyway. The only the thing what they. We did with the path when we went to PAM. The first PAMPA you did, you went with a different observer. And the same thing, your observer went with a different pilot who sort of explained the differentials and the things that you had to take note of, particular note of, which of course was we were briefed what to find out before we went. In the case of the Americans, they needed the icing index and the height of cloud, because they flew in formation and they could only fly between certain heights, and if there were clouds in those heights or any reasonable amount of it, then it meant that you had to report back and it would cancel their operation. The other thing that perhaps might be of interest to a reader is, of course, you went to study the weather in a certain area, but that wasn't the target area. It was the weather that was over the area that would expect it to be drifted, moved down to the area of the target at any particular hours after. So we were sent in all sorts of directions and all sorts of things, and we used to have to climb up into very nasty cumulonimbus crowds where one moment you're going 2,000 feet a minute up and the next second you're pulling back because you're diving at about 4,000 feet a minute and it frightens the life out of you. So there were hazards, a very great deal of hazards attached to the Met flight, and I think Don Bennett, when he wrote his book Pathfinder, mentions he criticized the ease in which the various commands asked for Pampas, not realizing the dangers that they were involved.
But so did you have training on the weather, you know, what to report on? Did you have
your basic training included a great deal of meteorology.
Oh, I see. So this would have really been using a lot of your basic...
Then you simply brushed up on diabatic rates and things like that, which you'd forgotten about. But that was virtually your... You didn't have to worry too much about that. It was your observer's worry. You flew the aircraft and you did as you were told, under most circumstances.
So the observer
command, but the observer told you what to do. There was only in all the operations that I flew, there was only one occasion when I went against my observer's instruction.
And this was
and it worked out that I was right.
Right. And this
I had a gut feeling about. I had a gut feeling about a certain thing. We'll come to that later on. It has a bearing on it.
Right.
Now I would tell you. Then they, very early in my start with the Met flight, the Boffins brought out a thing they called Monica. And it was an attachment to the rear end of your aircraft, and it echoed. You got a beep 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 beep, or beep beep slowly as it goes, depending upon the nearness of something behind you. And we went out and tested this Monica. I'd fly, and then they'd have another aircraft attack you, so to speak, and you would inform them on the relative value of the signal that came through. That was fine, and we did one operation which was up near Stavanger, and it was what I call a piece of cake operation. We went up to Norway. And with a Monica, and on the way back, all of a sudden, dit, 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 in my ear, which meant that whatever was, if there was a fighter, there was right on my tail. And of course, I stick forward and over, and there was real, real sort of evasive action, where of course the did it stopped something. And then I looking around, and we couldn't see anything or anybody. And then we calculated we were too far out in the North Sea for any fighters to be around. And I discussed it with Norrie. I said, "There's something wrong here." And then all of a sudden we got this did it did it. And I said, "Bugger this! Switch it off." So we switched the thing off, and when he came back, Norrie said, "You know what I think it is, Joe? It's reacting to the cloud." You know, when we mention this to the Boffins, which you shouldn't do. So we went up and we tested it, and sure enough, Norrie was right. He was a bright boy. Norrie, yeah. They desensitized this damn moniker and sent us off again. But it was very, very... it was... it wasn't really all that good. I think the Bomber Command would have liked it. I think it was developing for that purpose. It was too sensitive, and they not in my the time that I was there did they manage to desensitize sufficiently to be for it to be useful, or to us anyway. I was going to mention one a lot of our Pampa flights were pre-dawns, and usually they were for the Americans. We'd go and examine the areas necessary. We would just be given a phone, it would be a phone call, we'd stand by and be a phone call, and we simply take the coordinates of the area and the various places. Sometimes there would be as much as five or six legs, places for it to be in. And it would be up to the navigator. You take straight off, and then he would take it back, and up to the navigator to. And we reckoned that 20 minutes was the maximum delay in getting airborne. There's another story about Don Bennett with regards to that, but which I'll come to later. Now,
was it a dangerous job? This, were you armed at all?
No, we weren't armed at all. The other occasion where I was badly shot up, was my 14th op, which was a Pampa 4, which was only my fourth operation with the Met flight, and it wasn't a very pleasant one. And the route was The Hague, Munster, Wittenberg, Hamburg, where three Focke-Wulf 190s attached us at Hamburg. Attacked that. We had 8 cannon hits and machine gun holes, and a reach cloud cover. And according to Norrie, we had. Well, it's a story against myself, but I'll tell it. The flight commander Hatton, when we briefed us. We changed from the Mark 9 to the Mark 16, and being one from Mark 4 to the Mark 9, and we were told, because it had a two-stage, two-speed supercharger, that there wasn't an aircraft that could beat us. Once we saw them, if we opened up, they couldn't reach us, they couldn't catch us. And it was on this occasion that Norrie, we were doing, we were at high level and making contrails, and we could see the contrails of 5 other aircraft following us. Norrie said, Joe, they're a bit close, why don't you open up? So I said, well, I will open up, but I won't go through the gate because George Hatton told me they couldn't catch us. I'd barely got the words out of my mouth when bang, 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 bang. We were badly hit. And apparently at that time, they developed the Focke-Wulf 190G. It meant they injected water into somehow into the cylinder, which increased the compression ratio, and they could apparently only use it four times and then had to have an engine change. But it gave them a 40 knot increase in speed for just a few seconds, and it enabled us. And then I dived for cloud, and I rolled, and I tightened my roll up because I had a chap on my tail, and he flipped. He couldn't hold that, the tightness of the roll, and I saw him flip into the opposite direction. Then, of course, I was in trouble because I was upside down in cloud. Anyway, I managed. Norrie was saying to me, "Joe, you were saying, needle, ball, airspeed, needle, ball, airspeed, needle, ball, airspeed, all the time that you were rolling." And I eventually leveled it up and got back home. And we had, I've got a picture of the aircraft which shows certain of the, there was a piece in the starboard aileron, and there was a bullet, one of the bullets through one of the blades of the propellers, a clean little hole through, and the tail wheel was shot away, and with various other things, which if you study the photograph, I've got it there, you can see. And the next morning, my corporal fitter came and said, Mr. Patient said, "I think you might like this." And he gave me there was a little bit of wood, and on it was a 9-strand aileron cable. And 7 of those strands had been severed by a cannon shell. And I had done a tight roll on 2 strands of aileron cable, which I think shows that there was the good Lord above was looking after me that night as well. So... that was quite an experience.
Yes, well, I think I might have interrupted you when you were talking about the ground staff, because you were saying how one was so decent to you.
Yes, and that was yes. The flight sergeant who yes. pointed out that there was nothing wrong with the G set or with the intercom. It's just that the plug had come out, you see.
That was very nice, you know.
Yeah. Well, because he could have reported, I could have put up a black. It would have been, you know, as well.
Yes.
No, he was very, very good.
Yes, it seems you had a very good relationship.
I always had a very good relationship with the ground crews, which was particularly indicated when I was later on transferred to upward as a test pilot. I had a great deal more, of course, to do with ground crew at that time.
Because they do a very important job, don't they, Joe? The ground crew, you know, they're
They were, and in many, many cases, wasn't appreciated. They did an excellent job. I could easily have been a ground crew myself had I not been fortunate enough to have been employed by de Havilland. So.
Right. Several other operations or Pampers. One, I'll miss 1, 2, 3, 4, and come to what was interspersed with another moniker test. One which was very nearly disastrous. It was an American job for number 4, my USA number 4, op number 19. It was to Rotterdam, Arnhem, Duren and Blankenberg. And it was done completely blind, the whole lot. And on our way back, we didn't at that time... the knowledge of the Gulf Stream, there was no real knowledge at that time, like there is today, of the Gulf Stream at height. There was no knowledge of it at that time. We were never ever briefed about a Gulf Stream, with the result that we were very, very far from where we should have been
on our way back. And anyway, I said, well, Norrie, ask for a vector. And we got a vector to fly 270. I said, Norrie, 270. Yeah, he said, fly 270. I said, Norrie, 270. No way. And it had been, our transmission had been picked up by Germans, and we were told to steer 270, which would have took us back on the continent. I said, no way. It was intuition as much as anything. I said, we can't possibly need that. However, we stood around, and there was a searchlight, which we figured must be in UK. It was an up beam, and we sent off a verbal signal asking for a vector, and with no reply. And I said, well, what we better do is we'll fly due west. I'm sorry, I got it wrong. Not 270, 090, which would have put us back into correction. I'm sorry. So we flew 270. I said, then I'll make a descent, but I think we must be over water of some sort. But we decided then, he said, well, do a square search on that searchlight. And eventually we found another searchlight, and it wavered, giving us a direction to go. So we followed this direction until we saw very dimly a flare path. And we landed at a place called Pershaw. As luck would have it, we just pulled up in time, because at the end of the runway there was this cliff drop. Anyway, we taxied back, and of course you had to rush. The news of the weather that we had to be immediately put through to headquarters. So we jumped out of the aircraft, and at that time a group captain came, who was a station commander, and he said, I'll have you know that senior officers are saluted on this base to Norrie. And said, a jolly good show, sir. Yeah, thank you very much. And shook man's hand and ran off. That was Norrie, who was a sergeant. And but I thought to myself, what a prig. Yeah, we're very, very fortunate to get down. Otherwise, I would have had to have bailed out, hopefully over water or somewhere else. But anyway, it was quite an experience which we did not enjoy, and eventually they found that the person or the operators on this searchlight that we had, or we knew, wasn't doing his job. So now the next operation of note happened the very, very next time. But we had a spot of leave between that period. On this occasion, I was flying with a pilot officer, Bernstein. Very, very nice chap. And in fact, they were all very, very nice. And this was operation number 20. And it was Damaschud, Berlin, Longberg, Texel. And I lost the port engine at Warren. We had searchlights and flak very heavy at Hamburg. Now, this was an occasion where, had I been with Norrie, I would have gone to Sweden. But with another navigator and Norrie back in there, I told him when I eventually got back, I said, you'd have been lost without me, so I had to come back. Now, the reason I lost an engine, I had a runaway propeller. Well, all of a sudden, whoosh, and of course you had to feather very, very quickly, otherwise the propeller would whip off and either take your cockpit with you, or as the case may be. So we were on one engine. Now, we flew back, and it was at night, because otherwise I couldn't have dared tried it. We flew back, and I landed on one engine back at base, and of course I couldn't taxi on one engine off, so I ran it onto the grass off the runway, told the sergeant what had happened, and said, went to bed, went to briefing, and then went to bed. In the morning, there was a hullabaloo in the mess as I got up, and I walked in. I said, what the hell's happened? They said, well, won't mention the names, but were two friends of mine who took off in this aircraft and crashed. I said, how could they have taken off? The aircraft was unserviceable, and I left it there with it. Yes, this was the wing commander, engineering officer. I said, you're a bloody murderer. It's not often a flying officer can say that to a wing commander. I said, you're a bloody murderer. That aircraft was unserviceable. I left it off the aircraft. He said, we ran it up and they found nothing wrong with it, and so on and so forth. And so it meant that two friends of mine and two families were mourning because of some idiot didn't run the aircraft sufficiently. Obviously, the run-up that they did was not sufficiently long to thin the oil down sufficiently for the propeller to run away. And with the result, two very experienced and very nice fellows were dead. And of course, you can imagine how I felt. And he said, I'll court martial. I said, I don't care, so-and-so, what you do? I said, you shouldn't have sent that aircraft off like. And then he said, you didn't sign the aircraft unserviceable in the form 700. I said, I know I didn't, but I made a single engine return from behind Berlin. I had enough bloody problems without writing a report. Anyway, I got away with it. I think we'll call it a day there, shall we?
Right. Does that finish the Met experience?
No, indeed not.
Oh, right.
Oh, no. Want me to carry on? I'll carry on.
Well, yes, I think if we could possibly. I wondered, I had a note that there was a very special mission you had in Berlin.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I do think we need to
let's see if we've got anything interesting in between.
Yeah.
right. So that was op number 20.